Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
Whatever area that you get into, given that, you know, even if you're the best of the best, there's always a chance of failure. So I think it's important that you really like whatever you're doing. If you don't like it, life is too short. If you like what you're doing, you think about it even when you're not working. I mean, it's something that your mind is drawn to. And if you don't like it, you just really can't make it work, I think.
Hi, listeners. Welcome to 2021. Gosh, it's been a fascinating kickoff. I hope everyone's had a good time. And it's already close to the end of January. I can't believe how time just flies by. I think everyone really enjoys themselves in 2021 as the sizzles and barbecues get on as we celebrate Australia Day upcoming. But same thing with the property market is also sizzling like crazy. At least that's what I'm seeing at the moment with both of my fantastic co-hosts here. We've got Jazz returning to us, looking nice and sharp and fresh. How are you, Jazz?
I really like that, David, nice and sharp and fresh. My wife never says that, so you're my new wife now.
Mate, I think your wife needs a bit of talk, but anyway, take it offline, eh?
2021, man. Hopefully this will be a rocking year. 2020 has been marked as red in the diary, so really looking forward to 2021, especially with the way market has kick-started, whether it's property or some of the other asset classes that we discuss on the podcast.
It's strong, definitely. Yep.
And to our listeners, hopefully you guys have had a great Christmas, New Year break.
Hi, gentlemen, Jazz, David. Good to be back. 2021.
Crazy. John times. Vitan. John Vitan. That's how you'll call him now.
imagine Jabba the Hutt with coconut oil. That's kind of what Jazz and David are looking at right now. It's disgusting. Yes, I have a bit of a tan. Scared off some people at the beach last week, but
no, it's not that bad, mate. It's not that bad. Come on, let's be honest. I think you enjoy yourself more, but yeah, I'm not sure about the people around you, to be honest. No, but it's good. It's good to be back, gents, and definitely, I think 2021 is going to be a better year than 2020. I think we all agree that we farewell 2020, now that we're looking at even just 3 weeks into 2021, we're seeing asset prices start rocketing like crazy, like there's no tomorrow. We got this strong fear of missing out factor that's on the ground as you go to inspections. I mean, I personally went to a few inspections last weekend. There's easily 20 to 40 groups in Sydney on the local ground, inspecting properties. And I think, Jazz, you also mentioned in Melbourne, similar situation, except a lot higher in terms of the crowd.
Yeah, I was surprised, David. Like we were discussing before the recording, I was talking to some of the local agents within the area, and I'm talking more outer burbs than the inner city.
Yep.
But it gives you the feel, basically, on a property where I live, there has been 100 people inspecting the property, which if you look at, it's more like, I don't want to use the word boom because we are nowhere near that just yet, but 100 people coming to inspect the property tells you that the demand is going to be pretty solid for the good part of the year, or at least for the start of the year. This is Melbourne market, which we were in lockdown, obviously, good part of the year last year. So I think there's a pent-up demand, plus the people who are trying to flock away from the inner areas, apartment buildings and all, trying to find more open space. I think that's causing the demand to spike up. And plus you read all the articles as well along with that. So it's interesting. I'm really keen to see what's happening in the Sydney and other markets as well, if we want to touch on that.
I think John can probably give us some really good ideas, given the fact that obviously he's been on the ground and sourcing properties for clients. John, what are you seeing at the moment around the Sydney inner areas?
Yeah, so what I'm seeing is, I mean, the question is, do we use the B word, the boom word? But what I'm seeing is a phenomenal amount of interest. I think that there's a consensus now that the market is moving up, that we're in a quasi boom or the big early stages of a boom. And, you know, on the property blogs I go on regularly, there's a lot of people who accept now that we are in a property market upswing, but people are still sort of scratching their heads as to why that is. So what I'm seeing is I'm actually doing a lot of property searches in Sydney's inner west and inner south. So in a sense, kind of the parts of Sydney that didn't do great last year because of because kind of inner city apartments weren't so attractive. But what I'm seeing is that those types of properties are seen as good value at the moment, and there are certainly lots of, you know, lots of people at these inspections. One interesting thing I think is part of the perception that we're in a bull market or a property kind of boom is that due to the social distancing, they can't let all the people go into the open for inspection. So what you're seeing is lines around the corner. Now, the lines are there because they can't let everyone in, not necessarily because there's this overwhelming demand for the property, but it's feeding into a perception. If you go past an open for inspection sign, you've got the flag out the front and a line around the corner, you'd be thinking boom time. And it is, but it's actually overstating the boom because it's actually not a result of overwhelming demand for the property, but because we can't only put four people into the property at any one time. Mm-hmm. So it's a long way of answering the question that I think it's very, very strong at the moment. I think that we're seeing some strength in parts of the market that were weaker last year, like those inner city areas, or not CBD areas, but sort of city fringe. Mm-hmm. To your point, Jazz, I see this only ending if there's an intervention in the market to prevent it, and I can't see that happening. So I think we're safe as houses, no pun intended, for 2021, probably 2022, because I can't see anyone jumping in to slow down a property market boom.
Yep, I kind of agree with you on that completely, John, that it's this market is going to, and we discussed this last year as well, this market is probably going to run hot for the next year or two, so that won't surprise. And I think it's at that point where we'll see probably towards the end of 2022-23 where some kind of intervention will come, whether it's in the form of, doubt it's going to be rates, but it will be more tightening of the lending, making life hard for brokers and all that stuff. But I know, David, you keep a close tap on Brisbane market, and I've spoken to some of the agents up there as well, and yeah. It was the same feeling that I got over there too, that it's the investors are starting to kick in into full gear over there. Even the Logan and the Modern Bay areas, all of that's the ones that we've discussed in the past. But yeah, what do you think? What's happening?
Yeah, they're definitely starting to move. I think it's a combination of Brisbane affordability now is basically kicking in and showing, you know, basically proving to be the top, or if not one of the top three of the investment from a capital city perspective for investors to get the best bang out of buck, right? So, you know, imagine a yield that you can still get close to about 4-5%. This is a gross rental return that we're talking about. Whereas in Sydney, you know, you'll be, for any houses you're looking at, you'll be lucky to get a free in the front, or something for free in the front, right, in the good areas. So, you know, for those people who's, when there's no reason to park their money anymore into the savings account or anything, people started to look at, well, where else can I put it, right? So that's why we're seeing shares rally, we're seeing property markets, obviously starting to go with the B word in that sense. The other interesting one I'm also hearing on the ground is Perth is also doing very well, just from what we've been discussing last year, thanks to the iron ore, you know, continues to go up, right? The market on the ground in Perth, and I'm not really close to this, but just been speaking to a couple of buyers agents, David Hall, one of them that's been on our previous guest. He's been saying there's been a lot more investor activities lately in Perth. He's seeing some really good buying opportunities, especially in the next couple of years. I think last year we also touched on that. This Perth run could potentially be bigger than the mining boom years. What do you guys reckon?
Yeah. John?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I think that the one thing that's going to kind of quarantine Australia as a place where we're relatively unscathed is there's going to be a massive mining boom, and it's going to dwarf, I think, the early noughties or the late 90s where that was the last big one. So I totally agree, mining boom. Yeah. And all the implications that it has to property.
Yeah, Yeah, that's right. And I think that the good thing, I mean, the shift that I'm seeing at the moment, I mean, from my mortgage broking business side of things is that last year there's predominantly owner occupiers looking at upgrading, looking at first home buyers in the market. Not to say that volume has dropped, but in essence, we've got investors now coming back into the market as well. So for some reason, obviously, I'm assuming all the media articles is now flown through where, you know, everyone's kind of saying 2021, 2022 is going to see this X percentage of up increase across the nation. You know, obviously that started to get attractions from investors. So I'm seeing a lot more investors now getting ready, saying, oh, look, I don't want to miss out this opportunity. You know, what can we do to try to get finance for the next property? Whereas this kind of conversation did not happen last year, partly due to COVID. You know, now that we kind of had COVID partly behind us, I mean, it hasn't left, but partly behind us, and we're seeing more sentiments in the market. I'm seeing investor finance numbers also starting to tick up, and I assume that's going to be the case being reflected in the next couple of months as the stats being released.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on that. Perth market, like we said last year, it's late last year that it may outperform all the other markets. There's a good possibility when the run is complete, this property cycle, when it ends, it will probably end up outperforming a lot of the other markets to some extent because of the commodities run that we're going to see, which John has discussed on the podcast a few times, gold, silver, and all that. But the other interesting thing is the article that we were discussing before, which is the New Zealand house prices, and that's normally a good leading indicator into what's going to happen with the Australian property market, and that sort of feeds into the same narrative, which is the prices over the next year or two are going to be pretty strong. And New Zealand has already seen that in the last quarter of 2020, where it went up by 6.1%. And along with the AFR article by Chris Joyce, which was published earlier this week, which talks about an increase of somewhere between 15 to 20% that they're expecting for the Australian property market.
No, look, I agree. I think it's interesting to look at New Zealand as a leading indicator because it's that small kind of segmented market there, and we can look to it. And I agree. So we're going to start to see those monthly records that we've seen in the UK, in the US, and in New Zealand. We haven't actually had a biggest month growth of all time in Australia yet, and those other markets have. So I think there's a lot of growth still ahead of us. But what we'll see, I think, is high prices and high vacancy rates. So all of this growth isn't coming without a cost. We're seeing the rents continue to fall. The interesting thing is it doesn't matter. If you're an investor and you can get a 1.9% interest rate or a 2.2% interest rate, and let's say you can get 3% on a unit or 3.5% on a unit or a house, it doesn't matter that there's no yield left on these properties. So, you know, it's crazy not to be buying. And I think what we're actually seeing, if I take a step back and I look at all the asset classes that are running hot, I see that if you look at real estate, stock markets, and crypto, which we'll come to a bit later, everyone's looking for an alternative to the bank account. Everyone's looking for a saving mechanism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't leave the money in your CBA account. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? And people would be quite happy to see a neutral yielding property in some inner city than leave it in the bank account. And I think that these are all alternatives to savings accounts.
Mm-hmm. I think you hit the nail on the head over there. That's exactly what's happening with the interest rates at rock bottom when you talk about the savings account. And inflation running at its highest pace, which we did discuss a lot last year. And we'll see a lot more of that this year as well. So together, that feeds into that narrative, which is alternate asset classes, and if some goes into property, obviously you gotta split your eggs into different baskets. So some goes into property, some goes into crypto, some goes into commodities, which we have touched on as well, the ones that will run hot over the next year or two. So it's all. I think you're spot on, John, on that one. So.
I want to sort of round out the property thing. I mean, we all accept now that the consensus that property's rising. David's told us about investors coming back, which was that part of the market that was absent last year. So that'll be interesting to watch as well. I was listening to a podcast about 2 hours ago, And they were quoting, they were personal friends of Robert Kiyosaki, and they were saying that his perspective now, and I'd be really interested to get your thoughts on this, Robert Kiyosaki's perspective is that in the old days, you'd buy a property and the property was the asset and the mortgage was the liability. That's flipped in the negative interest rate world. The property is now the liability and the mortgage is the asset. Because with negative interest rates, they're essentially paying you to borrow. And the property itself is, with property management and with depreciation and with repairs, the property itself is a bit of a hassle, and with vacancy too. I mean, there's all this vacancy. So the asset is now the mortgage. And it's a bit of an overstatement. It's a bit cheeky, but I wanted to get your perspective on whether that's what's really happening in the property market.
I mean, everyone wants the mortgage because they think that because the price is going to go up. It's not necessarily because that the bank is actually paying us to hold the reality is we're still making repayments. Like it's not like I can just basically pay nothing and hold the property. So, I think that negative interest rate statement is probably a bit of an overstatement, which I'm not seeing at the moment. Not to say that it may not happen. Who knows what's going to happen, right? At the end of the day, we'll be starting some negative interest rates in the United States, UK, Europe side of things. But Australia, I think the RBA governor has been very, very consistent in terms of his message. We're not going into negative interest rates, and it's unlikely that bank is going to be paying for people to keep that mortgage because of the fact, I mean, the bank's going to go bust. How are they going to get their funding in that case? It's just not a normal way of how an economy works. I mean, so I don't know. I would agree with that, to be honest. I think, as I said, I think it's a bit cheeky. They probably took it to the other end a bit too much to a degree. But I do agree on the fact that property is starting to become more of a liability in the sense that the vacancy rate is higher, the rent is dropping, the cost is still the same of holding the property. You know, you still got all that repair costs that you got to do. Just because the aircon's broken doesn't mean that you don't need to fix it. You still need to do all that stuff. So the cost is starting to stack up, which means, pending, if we exclude the biggest expense, which is interest repayment, of course, or mortgage repayment, then if the rent keeps dropping to the point where it's not sustainable, then property could be a liability in the long run. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. Mm. I don't know. Jazz, what do you reckon?
So when we say property is a liability, John, that basically means, is it fair to say that means that property prices with the negative interest rates in whatever countries they are, and assume in the 5 years they are down here in down under Australia, that the property prices won't shoot up as much as they used to? They'll stagnate completely? That's what he means?
Oh, well, he's talking about negative real interest rates. So he says you pay, 2% on your mortgage, but then there's an inflation rate, a real inflation rate of, say, 3%. And that's why. So he's talking about real interest rates being negative.
But why does property becomes a liability? That the only reason it will become a liability is if the prices don't go up and you've got all the maintenance costs attached to it and all that.
Yeah,
stuff.
That's right. Property would be the liability, and this is a very, very cheeky way to put it, but it's because as rents fall and as vacancy rates increase, you still need to maintain the property and it's still depreciating. Mm. And so I think his claim is that the value left in the transaction is the inflating debt, and that's how you're becoming wealthier.
Mm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So agree on that. The property will become a liability. Even I agree to some extent to that part. Now, a mortgage becomes the asset. That's an interesting one. Because you have to be very selective with when you say that statement. Because if you can get a property which is not going to cost you a lot to maintain, but it can give you a decent yield when the bank rates are nothing, zero, so your savings is not fetching any real interest rate, and money is getting inflated anyways. So that's where mortgage becomes an asset. But then the question becomes is, what do you compare it with? Like we always have said in the last year, we have discussed this quite a lot, that what do you compare it with, right? So there's other asset classes, which is your gold and silver and all that stuff, right? So if you were to park your money over there, like last year, gold did about 30% return. your take, right? 25-30%. So then that yield, is that yield really that interesting when you can get a 30% return? So if you're buying a house with a, I don't know, 10-20% deposit, 30K, 60K at a minimum, you're talking, but the property is not going to grow up in value as much, according to his statement, it becomes a liability, then you're better off putting the 30K into an asset like gold, where you know you're going to get a decent return over the next few years. So is how you look at it. But then I think it becomes investor to investor thing. What stage of your life you are in? Like if you are a first home buyer or something, you're going to pay a rent anyways. So it might as well buy the property because interest rates are cheap, rather than paying the rent. At least you're holding on to something.
Mm.
And then for investors, it becomes is, you know what? Yeah, property was a great tool in the past, but now if it's becoming a little bit of a liability over the long run, we'll see good property price increases that we have discussed. That's going to happen, right? But relative to what? If we start comparing, then you go, we need to diversify. And the other example is probably crypto, which we discussed last year, like Bitcoin. If at the time nobody agreed, everyone laughed. But now when you look at a 12K price in November, if you were to put that 60K deposit that you had against the house, that would have been what, 300K or something. You would have bought half paid house. So it's a risk appetite thing. It's understanding of the other asset classes along with where you are within your journey. I think that's the most important thing. If you've got your house under your belt, then there's a lot of opportunities in this market if you have a little bit of spare cash or cash flow, in my opinion.
John, what do you think actually about that statement? I mean, I'm sure you got some thoughts about
it. Yeah, around crypto. Yeah, I mean, I've had my my finger hovering over the crypto button for the last 2 years, and I've never pulled the trigger. And suffice it to say, it's one of the regrets that I have, and I have to live with that every day. You're right that if you put money in crypto in November, you've tripled your money. I mean, for me, crypto was kind of the big story of December, January. Staggering returns. I remember sort of waking up and it hit 20,000, going to bed the next day, 30,000 and 40,000. Crazy. And it's arithmetically true that that was the right asset to hold over the last 12 months. The question is like, how do you know? How do you know what to buy? And for me, I still am unsure about the store of value perspective, but I've probably seen enough to feel like it's crypto, Bitcoin's here to stay, and Bitcoin plays a role. You know, we talk about we were talking about gold, and you know, I'm a real gold guy, but you still have to store it, and you still have to pay for storage. And crypto solves that problem. It creates, I mean, one of the most perfect portable forms of wealth is gold, and crypto's even better at portability.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I suppose I'm just going to have to live with it that I didn't get on the bandwagon, but it's all feeding back into the same story that these are all alternatives to cash. The market is craving safe havens. It's craving a place to park wealth, and it doesn't know where to park it. The market's all discombobulated because of these low interest rates. And so you'll see a rush into crypto, and what, it's down 16-17% today. So the market's kind of forever trying to decide, and it can't make up its mind.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, because how do you make a long-term call on anything? Mm-hmm. When interest rates are zero. So very confusing times in financial markets. We've financialized everything from real estate to crypto to gold. And, you know, when we talked in our final episode last year, we talked about one of the things that you'd need to expect going into 2021 is volatility and flash crashes that recover very quickly. And Bitcoin might be the first test case. If Bitcoin's down 16%, I wouldn't be surprised if it completely makes up its value by next week or next month. I mean, that's what we have to expect in a zero interest rate environment.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to end up seeing with the property market as well, but you don't feel the property market because it's not liquid. It will go up by 20% and may drop by 5% and then do another run to by 10%. So whatever the net will be is 15-20%. But that doesn't mean, that statement of Robert Kiyosaki doesn't mean that we are not bullish on property. It's over the long. This is, we are really talking over the long run, where the negative rates have kicked in, like in Europe, parts of Europe. That's where you have to tweak your investment strategy to work along with that. But for now, I think it's one of the safest. Like, well, we discussed this last year as well. I think it's one of the safest asset classes, especially if you're buying the house. You're right. How do you know whether crypto is going to go up or not, or other commodities are going to go up or not? That's where the experience comes into play, right? So we are not the smartest in the town, but that's where kind of podcasts like these and others are a little bit helpful to learn and share at the same time. So thoughts that we shared towards the end of, in the last episode, that crypto will outperform everything this year, followed by commodities, followed by property market. I think that's still in play. And it's we are seeing that firsthand within the first 3 weeks of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The great 2021 race. That's towards the end when we get to the December. Bitcoin's having a lead at the moment out of all the asset classes, but even in the midway run, you know, around June period, let's see. Because I think Bitcoin has the tendency of doing that really, really good dash, and then it will come back about, 20-30% in the next couple of months, and then potentially hovering and lingering on for a bit longer, and then essentially goes back up again to another degree. I don't know the cycle of that, but I think looking at the pattern, that seems to be the case from the past, right? So,
well, Bitcoin retraces. It's retraced 90% about five times. Mm. So when it last peaked in 2017, went to 20,000, then it retraced, I think, 85% to 3,000. I thought, because I'm not a Bitcoin guy, Bitcoin's finished. The Bitcoin people were saying, it does this all the time. This is how, you know, it does. And it'll get more stable as it matures, but it didn't shake anyone out who understood it.
You can't ride a horse just expecting that it's going to keep going up by, if you're seeking a 10x return, expect a 90% drop. That's pretty standard, stock standard thing, right? So that's why you don't want to be on this or junior miners kind of thing, those kind of horses, which you know, swing in either direction super fast, where within days they're up by 300% and within days they're down by 90%. So if you know your entries and exit, great, jump on the horse. If you don't, you're going to get hurt pretty bad. So watch your back on that one. Yeah,
and it's a volatility that basically kills a lot of the investor mindsets, because it's like, oh, it's gone up like 100%. Oh, my God, yay, I feel so rich. But the next day when it drops by 90%, you know, your emotions is like going through the roller coasters as well. So I think like what we mentioned last year as well, like, you know, you got to invest wisely in the current market. Yes, it's kind of, that's why I say, like, jokingly say it's like the big gamble 2021. It's kind of like, you know, you put it in, if you put it in the black or the red, which one? Now you might get lucky out of it, but at the same time, you know, be careful about how much you're putting in. You know, you only want to put in that you can afford to lose in the current environment, just because it could be, you know, you got to consider the worst case scenario. So but I do agree, it is going to be an interesting year ahead of us, both from all asset class perspective, just because, as I said, there's no reason why you want to park your savings in the bank account anymore in the current environment.
Yeah, and to your point, David, and Bitcoin is probably the best example. It went up 300x, but not right now, if you bought it at right at the top, which is about 42k, it's currently sitting at 29k-ish or something. So if you were to panic, you lost that money. That 30% straight away you have lost. So you don't want to be in this game. One, unless you've got a spare cash to lose. Two, you've got a higher risk appetite. You've got three, if you've got a stomach to digest these kind of things. Otherwise, just stay away from this space. Yeah. It's a horse that you don't want to be on.
That's right.
The other thing, John is probably the best person to touch on, was the election part, mate. So you've given the victory to Biden. We all were wrong. We were hoping Trump's going to win, holding Trump cards, and Trump ditched us on that one. So
inauguration was yesterday, was it?
Yeah.
Biden took over now.
Mm-hmm.
So John didn't give Biden anything. Yeah, look, I certainly thought Trump would win. And obviously, so what's in, I mean, the interesting thing about the election is Biden got the biggest vote in history and second was Trump. So it was a big turnout. And we don't need to cover, I think, the election. I mean, like, it was messy, you know, it was messy. There was all sorts of reactions and responses, and some were civilized and some weren't civilized. And so it was a very interesting time in American politics. I think it shows that America is very robust. It's got very robust institutions, and, you know, Americans often question them. And that's always appropriate, but it was set up that way for a reason. So that's the first thing. But the main thing, the takeaway for the election, parking who won and who lost and the reactions, I think the big thing from the election is, and I think this will be the story maybe for this year and next year, is big tech censorship. I mean, irrespective of what you think of blocking Trump's Twitter account and all of those and Facebook and so on, irrespective of what you think about it, the big tech oligarchs proved that they are more powerful than the United States president. Mm-hmm. And that is an unbelievable and amazing turn of events. So yeah. Big tech censorship's very interesting. You'll notice that I think YouTube said that they would ban any mention of fraud in the election. Fair enough. They blocked his Twitter account. And all these things can be totally defended and justified. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. But as a principle, it's a very interesting turn of events. And people were nervous about tech censorship and so on. That for me is the story of the election.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a good thing to have that kind of control where you can actually block speech of the president by some of these platforms, which, well, I think it was Twitter and whatever the other one was that did that?
Mainly Twitter, I think, from memory. Yeah.
What do you think, David? Is it a good thing, bad thing?
I don't think it's quite. I don't think it's quite necessarily a good or bad. But I think it's more about when you have so much impact with people to people, right? It's like it's almost like a cult to a degree. When you have when you're kind of be able to make an influence, and by just by basically doing tweaks in that sense, and be able to trigger a potential riot of some sort that's going to cause potential damage to the stability of the society, then people will have to react, and the big tech companies will have to react in order to prevent these from happening to a degree. I think I look at it this way, you know, are we taking social medias a bit too far than what we really should have to a degree, right? Like people just consume social media contents basically 24/7 nowadays. The younger generation may not even be able to live without it for a single day. So this is their new TV, inverted commas, we'll say, which they watch every day and 24/7. Now, they will follow those people that they believe and trust. And, you know, so for those people who's talking and making announcements and things like that, which may not necessarily be true in nature or, you know, because of the way how they perceive the world. And that could have an influence on those audiences which follow them and trust them without questioning,
mm-hmm.
to a sense, you know, like if we take it to an extreme level, like, you know, they may even go, right, go and jump off a cliff, and then there will be a whole bunch of followers that will just jump off a cliff without even questioning that. Mm. Now, that would be taking it to obviously a very extremely dangerous level. And that's why I said, you know, I think luckily it doesn't happen every day. And I think most people are pretty sensible in terms of using these types of social media messages. And, you know, I think it's a very effective way of receiving information and messages. I agree. But use it, don't abuse it. If you abuse it, then I think the message from big tech company is we will block it. And we will take action against it.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I'll add to that is I personally think having power, this much power, in a centralized way, mm-hmm. this concerns me a bit, where if the person at the top is not the right person, then you got bigger issues to deal with. So I think it's becoming more clear and clear with kind of the things that have been happening lately, whether it's the cryptocurrencies or whether it's the way these elections are being done, all that stuff, tech giants, that we are slowly going to move towards that decentralized world. Now, how it transitions over there, whether from monetary perspective or whether from social perspective, it will be interesting to watch. But that is the only thing I'll add to that. But it was a big deal. I'm with John on that. It was a big deal, big deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For me, the social media thing is extremely interesting. I mean, to take what I think it does is it breaks us into silos, and this is a very potentially dangerous thing because eventually, I think we're getting to the point in our culture where I'm not sure what exactly that we share. I remember I'm a product of the 90s, so I used to go to school and we used to talk about Seinfeld and The Simpsons every day. And because they're all at the same time, we used to watch them together. And there was none of this on demand. It was something that we as a culture shared. So we would watch, you know, Seinfeld and Friends and all that sort of stuff. And we would share that. I was talking to my mum about the riot on the Capitol 2 weeks ago now, and it's terrible, right? And we both agreed that it was terrible. But when I said, but so was the, you know, I think they occupied Seattle for a month at gunpoint, and mum had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I raise that is because we're all taking news from different sources and we're ginning ourselves up in a particular perspective. And because we're not consuming the same news, we're consuming the news that we choose to consume, we almost share nothing with our neighbours because we're consuming our own news. That my mum didn't know about the Seattle occupation, and she couldn't put the riot into perspective. They were both terrible.
Mm. Yeah. Well, to the listeners, market's going to be hot. Just be careful. Don't burn your hands, whether it's crypto commodities or property. When everything is going up, it's good, but it comes down fast as well. So just be careful. Don't overpay on whatever you're buying. And it's going to be there's a lot of horses running in this race. Let's see which one wins, whether it's silver or Bitcoin or real estate. Will be interesting to see the end of 2021. I think we have made our picks late last year in the last episode, which ones we think are going to win. So we'll when the time comes, look back. But expect more of this over the next couple of weeks, and we'll try and bring as much content as possible, along with a lot of other guests. Welcome to 2021, and we will see you guys next time. John, Jazz, and David. Cheers.